Hi everyone, and welcome to Sped Homeschool Conversations. We are so glad that you have joined us tonight. If you're joining us live, or if you're just watching this recorded session, tonight we are talking about transition planning. And whether you know about that or not, it's something that you should stick around for, whether you have a high school student or not, because eventually you probably will have a high school student. But tonight, my guest is Barb Blakesley, and I just want to thank you, Barb, for joining us and taking time out of your schedule.
Yeah, I'm really thankful to be here, so happy to do it.
Yeah, I'm so glad that we met. We met maybe about 4 months ago, and Barb has some great resources, and she teaches special ed most and knows a lot about transition planning, and that's why I wanted her to address this subject, as we're talking about high school this month and ending our month on that subject tonight. And just, it's more about planning, and I think when we think about planning with our high school students, there's a lot of things that we miss, and so we're going to talk about filling in some of those gaps, especially if you have a student that struggles. There's a lot of extra things that that parents need to be thinking about, as well as their student. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Just to get us started, I do want to thank Seven Sisters Homeschool for sponsoring this episode. They will hear more about them later, but just thank you, Seven Sisters. And so, Barb, as we're getting started, can you tell us a little bit about your background and why transition planning is such a passion for you? I know a lot of the resources you create are kind of around this particular age group and this time for students. So, yeah.
Yeah. I have been teaching I just finished my 25th year teaching in special ed. All of the years have been either in a high school setting, public ed, and, you know, just our comprehensive, you know, high schools in the district here. I started in Portland, and just going back, I really wanted to start my career in working with students who are deaf and hard of hearing. My bachelor's degree was in speech language pathology, so I have a real huge passion for communication, for working and doing whatever we can to foster our students' voices, to help them be heard. So that's where that passion I feel like really comes from. Got my degree in speech language pathology. While I was doing that, really loved my sign language classes, and then ended up going into special education with a focus of deaf and hard of hearing. So I started my career with students who were, they actually had intellectual and developmental disabilities, and they were deaf or hard of hearing, and my passion back in 1995 was, they're high school students. Let's get them out into the community. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I knew enough that, look, they're, you know, getting toward 18, 19, 20 years old. We didn't have transition programs back then. Mm-hmm. So in Portland public schools, I was like, hey, let's get out on public transportation. Let's do some internships in the school setting. And it was just a natural thing because
those practical applications.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that had to do a lot with growing up with some of my parents' friends had kids who had intellectual disabilities. Mm-hmm. And you know, growing up with them as peers, I'm like, well, that's what we do at this age, right?
Right.
So that was just a natural thing. I feel like I've always been someone that holds very high expectations, regardless of disability. So back there with my group of students as a first, second, third year teacher, starting in transition, and learning everything since then. Early on, I was thinking, wow, students need to have need to be able to tell about themselves, have an active role in their education and their choices for post-school activities. So that started way back in my career. And as I went on, I moved up. I live in the Seattle area, just north of Seattle, and the school district I'm in don't have students who are deaf and hard of hearing. They have kind of, you know, they have regional programs.
The school programs, right.
So, so my most of my career, I've spent in, like I said, in the public high school, working with students 14 to 21. And then just when our district wanted to start an adult transition program, I wanted to be a part of that because it just has always been a desire of mine. So I got to be on the development board for that, spent a few years teaching in that program. And so, you know, fast forward to now, or actually 6 years ago, 6 or 7 years ago, when I was just finishing some work in our adult transition program, I'm like, where is the communication, where's the portfolio for students to take ownership and use their voices and gather all the information that is needing to be shared to adult service agencies and to whoever else is going to be supporting them in secondary education or wherever. Where is that information being developed and held on and owned by the student? So that's where my work in developing that portfolio and some of the tools that I've developed, that's kind of where that came from. So that's a little bit of my, my background and my history.
It's always been something that's been stirring in your heart to do. And even before it was a program per se, I mean, now it seems like that, that word, especially in the public school arena, is like, you've got to know about that. If you're in special ed, a student has a transition plan. I mean, we even have it on our website. If you look at the high school page or the IEP and how to write that, we reference a transition plan and examples of that. So as we're getting started, you know, there, if somebody's been in homeschooling the whole time, they probably have no idea what we're talking about. So what is a transition plan and what does it entail?
Well, so for us, in we're mandated through IDEA to have a transition plan as part of the individualized education plan, the IEP that the student has. So at age 14, between 14 and 16, a lot of districts start at 14, but mandated to be done starting at age 16, that students have a well-developed transition plan, including what is their post-secondary education goal? What is their post-secondary you know, training and employment goal? What does housing and independent living look like? What are all the supports that are needed? What's the course of study to get there? And how do all those things tie together? So if we're creating a transition plan, we need to tie everything we're doing early on to get to those goals. So that's basically the idea of, okay, what is the goal? What are the assessments, the formal and informal assessments that we're going to provide to see, okay, where are they at? What are the steps that are needed to get to those goals? And let's make them realistic so they can be attainable.
So it's basically a roadmap for where your student is now to where they want to be when this is all said and done and they're graduated.
Exactly right. That's how I see it. I do see it as a roadmap with those, you know, different mile markers along the way. Those smaller steps that, you know, if you start with, you know, just a grandiose goal, how are you going to get there? So starting earlier on and taking those small steps, you know, that's one of the most passionate, most exciting parts of what I do is walking with families through that process. So making it like, okay, I can take these steps instead of getting to the end and going, what the heck do you do?
Right. Yeah. And I love when you talked about that, you were saying about assessments, because there's a lot of things that you really don't know that is missing until you do those assessments to figure out, you know, what is lacking to get to those end goals as well.
Right. Right.
So
right.
It's a time of discovery as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And there are a lot of resources too to find those assessments. Different websites nationally. NTACT is one of them, where you can go and find, you know, tools and assessments that will help inform the instruction or the path that that a parent or a caregiver, a teacher is going to take with their young adult.
Right. Yeah. There are a lot of resources out there. I think I wrote a blog a while back, but I think it was earlier this month on different resources parents can use to evaluate their students.
Yeah.
So that does help, and there's a lot of good things out there.
Right.
So we're not talking about, you know, a college prep plan specifically, but it may include.
Could that, include.
But
yep.
it's more comprehensive than that, and it's not just what is my child going to be when they grow up.
Yeah.
Because that's basically what I set mine off of, because there wasn't much. You know, when my son started high school, well, that was a long time ago, that we had to go off of other than, well, if you prepare your child for their career. And so what are some other things that you specifically look at or go through other than just that career and school, you know, post-secondary learning?
All of it. I mean, when you think of a student's full life post high school, you know, employment is just a small part of that overall picture of a young adult's full life as they become independent. So, how can we begin to build on their social skills? How do we help them become great self advocates? What does self determination look like? How do we help them with, even, you know, becoming more responsible for chores at home? It's, you know, we can't always be just doing for them. We can, as well, you know, it takes, I know from personal experience, because I have a new, you know, I'm newly married. I have a wonderful stepson who has gone through this process, and so I'm seeing it now from a parent perspective. And his mom has done incredible work to bring him along to this year 21. But putting that responsibility on the young adult to start at 13, 14, 15 years old, to be doing chores, to be doing those independent living activities, where they're going to be so much better off in the long run if we can, you know, build those independent living skills, social skills.
And you build them up little by little versus just dumping it on them all at one time and saying, well, good luck. It doesn't work as well.
And then you're just, you know, it's the amount of support that's required in independent living. So it does take that long process of building those skills and equipping young adults with, you know, with the self-advocacy that they need, self-determination skills. And then so taking ownership over their education, knowing what, you know, when they enter into vocational settings or post-secondary education, are they able to request accommodations? Do they know what support needs they have? And that's, you know, I can't pretend to know and understand what it feels like for a parent, because I don't have my own biological, son or daughter, where I'm needing to, you know, release from that ownership or wanting to do for those types of things.
Right.
But students do so well when they're able to, you know, voice those supports they need, to be able to say, okay, hey, wait, I need to meet with my DVR counselor. What are the supports that I might need to, you know, budget my money or whatever it is.
Right. Yeah. And if they've already have those in place and they're working with them, it doesn't seem like an odd thing to them to all of a sudden, you know, be doing this more on their own. Because you take those baby steps through that plan. Yeah. I know when my son went to college, he has decided not to disclose his disability. And that was his choice. We had a discussion about that and how, you know, you just have to do it then. But there were some professors who didn't grade him equally because of his disability. And he had to contest them all the way up to the dean of the college. And, you know, when he called me, I just said, well, you know what you need to do, don't you? And he said, yeah. And so then he did it. And, it, you know, everything worked out. But, yeah, it's that ownership and that empowerment to do what needs to be done. And just know that that's the next step that you have to take. And it's okay to do that.
So. Right. And I think that the way bringing a young adult along into that process, I feel like, and I know from some personal experience that when you apply a strengths-based approach to your young adult, your student, whoever you're working with, and you help them to see that the aspects of their disability, you know, if they have autism, they see the world in a different way. They, you know, if they have, you know, whatever their label is, there are things to pull out. There are strengths to focus on, and let's do that, you know, but let's do that in a process that, you know, they can actually work through. Oh, wait, I am good at those things. Oh, God has gifted me in those, and, you know, those areas. And so, you know, that conversation about let's disclose your disability, here are all the things that I'm really good at. Here are the things I may struggle with. And helping our young adults to be able to voice those things because they've had opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to write it down, to talk about it, to present it to people from 14, you know, all the way up to 21.
Right. So critical. And yeah, I wanted to address too the importance of student involvement in that, and how best can parents go about getting them involved into this process from the very beginning, because it's their life, and you know, eventually this is what they're going to be, you know, working with and moving towards as well.
I do. In my classroom, I've spent a lot of time thinking through how do I map out those strengths. How do I help students see those and match them to the things that they could potentially do in the future, as far as real career choices. So laying them out and going through the detailed process over, you know, year after year. How can I expect a student at 16, you know, at 17, 18, or 19 to go, oh yeah, that's easy. I just will disclose my disability, and it just doesn't work that way. So, you know, and how do I match who I am with a realistic job choice? I think I a little bit got off of your question.
Oh, that's okay. That's a good thing to address, because, it's a period of self-discovery. And I remember listening to, I went to some parent meeting about, it was a guy, he was a financial planner, but he was explaining about transition planning and in the processes. He goes, you know, you get to these goals that your student has, but then the end goal may change or be tweaked a little bit just because of the student is learning more about themselves through this process. And it's kind of like this give and take back and forth is, the transition plan transitions during.
It always does.
Yeah. And it's great to have your student involved in that process and to say, well, no, I think I want to head this direction. And so then, okay, let's reevaluate what your goals are and, you know, all these things. And so it's this ongoing fluid process instead of just, okay, we've got the 4-year plan. Now let's just stick to it. You know, I can see some parents doing that.
Right. Yeah. And I feel like, this is really reflective in the work that I do, the books that I've written, the tools that I try to put out for people, is that, you know, okay, let's give them all of the prompts that they need to be able to, you know, make authentic responses, and we can tweak this thing as we go. But right. But what is the big dream? What is your story? How do you share about your communication style, the mode of communication that you use? How can you best be understood? And then move to those, you know, what are my strengths and weaknesses? How do I then match those to career goals? And then from that, okay, how am I going to, you know, enter into those activities that will help prepare me for a real job? There's so much to do from those middle school years.
Right. Yeah, it isn't just, you know, can we get enough credits to fill the transcript and graduate you? It's can we launch you to what is next? And that's different for every student, but it doesn't mean that a transition plan isn't something that's needed. Right. I know I got a question from a parent in the middle of this week that she asked me, you know, I've got a middle school student, and we're looking at disability benefits for him at 18. She goes, I asked her, well, you want before 18? Are we talking about Social Security, you know, and all those questions too? And she said, no, after 18, definitely. And she said, but I don't know what to even start recording, or if I need anything to record, so that he has more ability to you know, to ask for those services and those accommodations that he needs. So how does that all build into a transition plan?
Well, just the first steps that I've taken with families is just make sure you keep really good records. When was disability documented? What are the physician's reports? What are the psych evals that you have and have collected? Mm-hmm. And at some point, you know, in some way, inviting the young adult, your young adult, into that information that can be shared. And collecting a portfolio for the student is very important. I know for our vocational rehabilitation counselors, they really appreciate when we can bring all of those documents to the intake meeting, where, you know, okay, here's what we have. What's the opportunity? Is my young adult eligible for services? Mm-hmm. What does that path look like to, you know, essentially just break down barriers to employment and education to get there? So, you know, keeping those before, you know, long before those records need to be brought to those situations, to, you know, to the SSI application process, all of different areas that would be adult service agency supports for the young adult as they enter into, you know, their years 18 to 21.
Yeah, and I can see how important the information that, if like your student has found that something works really well for them, to document that so that they know that this is something that can be employed in a work situation or whatever else, that this accommodation works very successfully.
What I've started to do with my students this season is so incredible in revamping how we're approaching transition planning, how we're helping students to take ownership over their, you know, accommodations and modifications, and creating we're using Google Classroom for our platform, and then in that Google Classroom, I'm having that be a classroom of one student where all of the supports are living in that one situation. I don't know if for your viewers if that type of thing works, but you know, having a place to hold all of those documents. to refer to them, to build on them, to bring in, you know, activities that do start to build a portfolio. It's, you know, when we're doing remote learning, that's just where we're going. And I think it's a huge benefit to us in the long run.
Well, and it is good to be able to store things virtually, and didn't even think about that, you know, because our parents do write IEPs, but you know, to just upload them to have a place, because I often tell parents to do that with their students' transcript and their diploma, because you are the owner of that. It's not like you can go back to a school and say, can I get an extra copy? You are the school. And so to have some virtual space where all those documents can be stored is
right.
a great idea.
And having tools that help students take ownership over that.
Right, so they can have access to that too.
They're the ones that should be going and requesting those transcripts. What do they say when they get there? How? Mm-hmm. What are those little steps to take, you know, in order to be the ones to hold that information?
Right.
Watching, you know, making sure that they do it the right way. But regardless of their level of communication and functioning, we need them. We need to provide many opportunities for them to be the owners.
So true. That, yeah, and it's those opportunities. I love that word, because we fly so fast through life, and especially when our kids are teens, that we miss a lot of those opportunities, and we're so on autopilot of what we've always done, to take that step back and say, wait, this is something you're supposed to be doing. I mean, whether it's laundry or a chore, or, you know, or learning a new skill, like writing a resume, or, you know, all of those things, that those are incremental steps that, and it's nice to have a plan, because that'll make you check and be able to do that. So as far as like record keeping for things like that, then, you know, just checklists, or however best, I guess, it is to record that information is probably the best thing to do.
Having sections, you know, whatever platform you're using, if it's paper, pencil, or if it's digital, whatever mode people are most comfortable with, having a section for those, you know, okay, these are the task lists that work. These are the scripts that my young adult uses when they go to, you know, they need to request transcripts, they need to go report, you know, an absence for work or whatever. What are those things that they use as tools and keep them in a spot? And then it changes over time, but you know, when we have it all in one place, that helps a student go, okay, yeah, these are the supports that I need to become successful.
Right. And I'm just thinking, we had our kids all write thank you notes to their uncle. He gave them gifts, and you know, they're going, how do I find the words to write that thank you? So there would be a good thing to store. You know, you write this thing and then you stick it there, because now when you have reference, if I need to write a thank you note to somebody else, I have some wording.
Right.
And, you know, it's just that constant, you know, I guess we all think of our hard drives maybe as that place.
Yeah.
But if you're doing it mutually with your student, it has to be a common space where both of you are able to put information into there.
But understandably, you know, as you said, life is coming at you so fast. There's so many things to do, and the time that it takes to teach through all of those skills, it's a dedicated effort. But you know, having a system to work through, a process to follow, it's you know, then it's not just like, well, we did some of this, we did some of that. Provides them a platform to stand on.
Right, yeah. When we come back, I want to talk about how do we assign credits in classes when we have a transition plan? Because I think a lot of parents are maybe going, oh, well, wait, we got to do this and school? Or how do we fit all this in? So, but we're going to hear from our sponsors, but Seven Sisters Homeschool, and then I'm going to come back and we're going to talk to Barb a little bit more. So I'll give you a break, take a drink of water. And so we're going to talk just a little bit about our sponsor, Seven Sisters Homeschool. If you do not know about them, I knew about them way before we even started Sped Homeschool. There were six friends that put together curriculum for their own teenagers. And Vicki Tillman, who is one of the Seven Sisters, she was on my broadcast last week. And but they have no busy work ebook curriculum that these 20 plus year veteran homeschool moms wrote for their own kids, and kids from struggling all the way up to very high achieving college prep type of courses. You can pick and choose, but they've just got a lot of really out of the box type of curriculum, and we just want to thank them for sponsoring this episode. And if you have a need for some curriculum, or if like me, you're looking for some off the wall types of things to do with your very unique child, then they might have something that you're looking for. So anyways, check them out. But thank you, Seven Sisters, for sponsoring this broadcast. And I saw Nancy that you put something up. She said that she sent me a message on Facebook, if I can check it before the meeting, and Google Hangouts. If you do not know that after this broadcast, we have a mom's night out on Google Hangouts. If you are in our Facebook support group or in any of our jump groups, you can find the link there. So anyways, we talk about homeschooling, we talk about mom things, we talk about anything. So I hope that you can join us. So we're going to bring Barb back, and we're going to continue this discussion. And I'm excited to dive back in. Thank you so much for all that you've been sharing already. And thank you all that are watching. Make sure you know that you can add comments in the section down below while we are live, and we would like to build them into our conversation if you have anything to add or questions to ask. So I wanted to address that question that I kind of left you with before we took the break, was how do we fit all of this in? And you know, we're looking at these high school years, and parents often say, well, they have to have this many credits for this and this many credits for this, and often they're looking at a college prep plan.
Right.
And there are students who still would be going to college, but yet we have these other transition goals. And so how does that all get incorporated and planned out?
Yeah, well, I mean, I have to answer that from a public education
filter,
because that's really my only experience. And the way to do that is that we have flexible credits that all students are available to take. And whether that be in independent living and life skills, academic lab, it could be in, independent living? Classes, that's where we spend our time developing a transition portfolio, going through those activities, role-playing, how are you going to walk up to a boss and talk about the accommodations that you need? How are you going to, in our school setting, it would be, what does that look like for you to, appropriately approach a teacher and say, I wanted to let you know that I have some accommodations and modifications in my IEP. This is a list of what they are. Mm-hmm. Here are the strengths that I have. I'm really good at learning in this way. So helping students know what their specific learning style is, how they communicate best, and letting them be the ones. And our para educators or other support providers coach them along in that process, but that's part of the credits that they're earning in those classes, is they're able to do those things. They're able to build a portfolio, and that portfolio is what's graded. It's what's used then as they move through to the next grade or the next employment opportunity, post-secondary education opportunity.
I think that's good for homeschool parents, though, to hear, because they often say, well, am I cheating the system by calling this a class or a credit? And no, this is what they do in the public schools, is that oftentimes we build a class based on credit hours on what our student is doing. So if your student is spending a lot of time, you know, learning about computers and, you know, maybe keyboarding or all these things, you can call it, you know, computer skills. And it can be a credit or a half credit, and you just have to figure out how to grade it. And, you know, but to kind of lump some of that into a class and then put it on the transcript that way.
I'm glad you mentioned about keyboarding skills, because, you know, the portfolio that I created, I made it digital intentionally so that students who struggle more with paper pencil kind of activities can use voice to text features. And go through that process of learning all of the tools for accessibility that they'll need when they move into different settings. Teaching those skills honestly, I feel like those are some of the most important skills they can possibly be learning and earning credits for, because they have to use those skills throughout their adulthood. Their self-determination, their self-advocacy, and we need classes where we're able to spend time doing that. So absolutely, we should get credit for that.
Yeah. Well, I think I can't remember who I was talking to. We were talking about people skills, and I thought, that's really got to be at the top of the list for every high schooler, because if you look at employers and what they're looking for in employees eventually, those rise to the top. It's not like, can you do math well? Yes, if you're an engineer, that's important. But again, they're going to come back to those people skills again. Can you work in a team? Because that matters even more.
And you ask good questions that are, that can you have good social boundaries? Mm-hmm. Can you do those things? Those soft skills are, those are the reasons that our young adults get fired from jobs, because they haven't built those skills up and been given opportunities to practice and do that in a high school setting, or, you know, just practicing, learning, growing through those awkward moments, you know.
And that goes back to what you were talking about when we first started too, but why don't you get your students out into the real world to practice these things? And so much of our transition planning should be looking for those opportunities to get them out, try it out. And if they fail, it's in a safe environment. It's only a one-time thing. It's not like your job is hinging on this.
Right. So, Some of those transition goals, the goals for, you know, our vocational goals, maybe it does look like, you know, that they do a job shadow, that they do an interest, you know, an informational interview. They do those value surveys, interests, and build those things, those activities, so that they, you know, how do they know if they want that type of job? You know, if they want to work at Home Depot, or they want to work at, you know, Microsoft. How would they know? They have to have opportunities to just get out there and see what it looks like and feels like. Mm-hmm. So, you know, exploring those. Sadly, in public education, our funding hasn't allowed for us to do that. And I think so much more flexibility can be done in a homeschool environment where you can go out and explore those things a lot more easily than we can in public ed.
Yeah, because if you have a friend who's willing to take your student under their wing for, you know, a day or a week, or to kind of show them the ropes, and that's permissible. You can make that happen. And if they want to incorporate, you know, working with your neighbor's kids, if they're, you know, instead of doing child development in a classroom setting, we can just babysit and be under, you know, a mom's helper, or however that works out. There's so many unique ways that we can build that out, as well as community service at the same time, which is an awesome way to do it. So yeah.
I don't want to miss out on an opportunity. I want to talk about also our vocational rehabilitation offices that we have access to. And we're seeing a lot more opportunities it's called WIOA, the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act, that was passed, and that vocational rehabilitation counselors are starting to work with young adults earlier on. At 15, 16 years old, I want to encourage people to connect with their DVR offices and be able to see, hey, are there some opportunities for work-based learning? And if there is a documented disability, they should qualify for those things. So, you know, make sure that earlier on that those connections with vocational rehabilitation or, you know, developmental disabilities administration, you know, exploring those earlier than later is really important.
Right. Yeah, that's good to know, because yeah, we're often so removed from those services that a lot of times parents, when, I mean, it's like 18 hits and they're going, oh, that's right, we need to look at that, and then, you know, they're going through this whole checklist, and then guardianship is, you know, all these things are just not talked about in the homeschooling environment, and yet there's a lot of parents that need to know that information. And you need to prepare the paperwork for those things way ahead of time, like we talked about before.
Right.
Because I know my parents have gone through the guardianship process with my adopted siblings many times, and I've talked to my parents, like, what did you document, you know? And so it's,
right.
There's a lot of good information about that. But yeah, just making sure that you're thinking about that way before their 18th birthday.
and you know, knowing that the rules often change, change in our systems, but knowing what, you know, okay, if my young adult is going to be receiving SSI benefits, what does work look like with those benefits? How does all that balance out? How do we make choices around guardianship? Should it be a power of attorney instead? You know, so that
there's so many other options.
So there's just a lot of things to consider with the agencies that are available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are a lot of helps out there. Just
there really are.
Depending on what stage you're in, that changes a little bit. But yeah, definitely having that input. So as far as, you know, other things that parents can do, I'm trying to think of what, you know, even if their student is before these years and we're looking at transition planning, what are some things that even they should be documenting in the younger years that help when a student comes, like, into your program that you know about in setting a transition plan up?
I think really getting a really good profile of the preferences that the young adult has or the child has, knowing things that, you know, settle them and don't cause anxiety or cause, you know, cause frustration leading to, you know, behavioral issues. But, you know, that we don't, you know, what are the ways that we can prevent escalations in behavior? What are the things that, you know, are needed to make sure that their voice and their communication is heard and known? How do we give them choices early on? Choice making is huge. Even at younger ages, giving opportunities for setting goals. I think that goal setting is one of the most the best predictors of post-school outcomes is the ability to set your own goals and move toward those goals. So, you know, even if they're 7, 8, 9 years old, what is your goal? What, you know, let's create a goal around whatever it is. You know, we're going to go to school. Okay. So, you know, how are we going to get there? And just understanding and being able to share out what are those rewards, what are those, you know, intrinsic motivators, what are the ways that our young adults are wanting to find their self-determination, be able to advocate for themselves, and what motivates them. So just helping to develop those things early on leads to all of those choices, that all that choice making and goal setting when they start to enter post-secondary education and things like that. So there's so much to do along the way.
Right, yeah. And I love that you didn't mention anything about the core subjects. That gets them there. So, because I had a conversation with the parent, and she's like, we spend most of our time character training. And I was like, well, that's a good thing. I mean, that's what I spent most of the time. And we fit in the math and the reading and the writing, but most of the time we spent with two children fighting, sitting across the room, trying to find reconciliation. Those are the skills.
They
really led them to being successful later on. And we often think that that's a distraction, but that is truly where the learning is key, and where we can't skip those moments.
And as parents, you know the best ways that your child regulates their behavior, how you help them regulate their emotions, you know, how they're feeling, how they're functioning and interacting with the world.
Right.
You know all those things, and they are learning those things too. So documenting all of them along the way is so powerful to share with whoever's going to be working with them. That's such a great place to start.
So true. Yeah. So especially for those students that aren't going to be able to articulate themselves, you're giving over to another caregiver. But to have that documentation in place instead of just saying, well, you know, this is kind of what they like. Although, you know, I also realize that we as caregivers sometimes do it so much we don't even realize we're doing it.
Yeah.
And to take that time to evaluate through that process of what am I doing? You know, even to document that into that portfolio and what is eventually something I can't do. I know my parents are in their 70s and they still have four kids at home, and all of us biological kids are going, you need to start documenting these things, because eventually you're not going to be there, and we're going to be the ones telling somebody what they need to do. So
I think that's one of the major reasons why I, you know, at 7 years ago, when I came out of our adult transition program, and I sat there and I'm like, parents and teachers have all this information.
Mm-hmm.
How is this getting shared with the adult service agencies or the caregivers who are in the group homes or whoever else is interacting with the young adult? The voice that, you know, the ownership has to be placed back on the student. And the other thing I really want to emphasize, and I can't state this more emphatically or emphatically enough, I don't know how to say that, but that there's absolutely no guilt or shame that parents should feel that, oh, I haven't done enough. It can become such an overwhelming thing. Just do.
Mm-hmm.
Child so well, and don't let anybody put any guilt or shame on you that you haven't done this, you haven't signed up for SSI, you haven't done guardianship, you haven't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, that crushes me when I sense that from parents, that they that they feel like they haven't done enough. There's always time to start. So.
Right, there's always time. I want to put up your website, My Key Plans. Do you want to explain a little bit about what people can find there?
So My Key Plans is just my landing page for sharing a little bit about why I wrote the book that I did. It's a portfolio, essentially a student workbook to develop systematically a very comprehensive portfolio. So it explains about the why. It also shows kind of how to get there. I also created a teacher's edition of the transition portfolio. So my transition portfolio teacher edition has lesson plans. It has community access opportunities. It has all of the things that you would do to create a portfolio to enhance a student's, a young adult's experience as they become their own self-advocates and they become self-determined adults. So you can find there just how to buy the book and just some resources to support why it's so important to build on self-determination and helping students become their personal power and choice is so important. We want them to be their own change agents and able to. So all the information can be found there.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great. And that's kind of how I got connected with Barb. I saw that she was doing that, and you also have a Teachers Pay Teachers site. Is it just it's My Key Plans, right? That they have to look, or is it your name?
It's
Teachers Pay Teachers.
You can find it both ways. So My Key Plans. You can find Teachers Pay Teachers site that way. But it's My Key Plans is the name of my Teachers Pay Teachers site as well.
Okay.
And Teachers Pay Teachers is really just the place where I have kept all the digital components of the book. The entire book is in fillable PDF. So, whatever sections of the book or the entire book that people want to utilize to build those portfolios, that's where that can be found.
Okay. That's great. Yeah. It's instead of trying to recreate the wheel,
I have all of the, prompts and everything to draw out expressive communication and to lead students along. So,
this is important with teenagers. You just can't draw anything out of them.
Give them a blank page or a box to fill out. You have to prompt them to what are you thinking about yourself in this area?
Right. So. Yeah, and very pointed and specific, and giving them that time to dream and think outside of what everybody is mandated on them, and that takes some time.
Yeah. It does.
But if you can teach a child to dream, and you said about setting goals, but also dreaming. I think dreaming is so important, especially in those high school years, to try things. And we talked about this in multiple episodes this month of just giving them the opportunity to fail and move on. Because failure is, you learn from it, and you learn maybe I don't like this as much, and so I'm going to try something else, and that's okay.
Exactly.
So, awesome. Well, I know you had a couple other resources. Was there anything else that you wanted me to share or to share on?
I just thinking about parents who have younger children and helping them to, I'm not always just going to do everything for you. How do I structure and have task lists, or helping through a behavioral problem or social issues, helping our young adults see what their bodies are doing in space and social stories. So I have some links that I feel like from Carol Gray that have been really helpful. Her work is really great in social story development. And then just using, as we're using our iPads and iPhones and things like that going through our days, I've found that our First Ben app that's going to be linked, I think, to just being able to use pictures and words to show task lists to develop for chores or for activities that you're doing in the home for independent living, things like that. That's really helpful to you. It's been helpful for me. I use that in the classroom all the time.
Yeah, it's amazing how some just tiny little apps can just like transform your life.
Oh, amazing. Yeah.
So yeah, I put up both those on the screen. Mm-hmm. If they went too fast, I will make sure to share them in the Facebook feed, and they will be on the YouTube video for the long as well as short sections, so you can find that there. If you are listening on the podcast, check out the YouTube video that's related to this on transition planning. It's the same title as the podcast you're listening to, and you'll be able to find links to those resources. We just don't have the content place to store all anything like that on Podomatic. So Yeah. Well, this has been a really good conversation, Barb. I'm glad we talked about this. I hope
too.
Parents are feeling a little more at ease. I know if I would have gotten this information when my oldest started high school, I think I would have been in a better place. I basically left and cried.
Oh, no.
It was so, I mean, they gave me this college prep plan and I'm thinking, my child just started reading last year.
Yeah.
let's not talk about college.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can still dream big. I mean, he just did graduate from college, that same child, this month. And it was amazing. His diploma came in the mail and it said cum laude. And my husband's like, you graduated with honors. I mean, he didn't even know. It's so funny. So, yeah. But yeah, it's, you just take one step at a time. You just don't know where they're going to end up.
That's the whole thing, is don't underestimate what your child can do and achieve, and just, you know, taking those small steps, as painful as it can be in moments, there's so much hope in the future, and supports that are available.
Yeah, definitely. So and definitely check out Barb's resource, because that'll be a really big help. Again, not recreating anything, and her information is also on our website. She's one of our partner organizations. And so under curriculum, you'll see my key plans there. So, so thanks so much, Barb. And
thank you.
This has been great. This ends our month talking about high school. So next month, we are having our second annual SPED Homeschool Awareness Month. And so that month is, we're focusing on our community stories. Starting tomorrow, July 1st, we'll have our first blog from a homeschooler that just is sharing their story. And we're going to be doing that in our interviews as well as in our articles. And so our first guest next week will be Dawn Spence. She is the teaching manager for SPED Homeschool. She's been a dear friend of mine for years. But she's going to talk about how she transitioned from being a special ed teacher to a special ed homeschooler. She now has three kids she homeschools at home, and at varying levels of learning difficulties. And just what that transition was like and how different homeschooling is. That's what I hear all the time from her. I am still learning. So, yeah.
I'm still learning too. After 5 years. So, yeah.
It's amazing. But everything you learn goes for something good to help a student. So, we're going to talk to Dawn next week. And so I hope you can join us for that. And thank you again, Barb. It was a great conversation. And
thank you so much for the opportunity to talk and to connect. I really appreciate it.
You are welcome. And so, thanks everybody for joining us. We'll see you again next week. Bye.